This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI.
Woo!
Welcome into episode 410 of the Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Bridget and Scott, we have the trade deadline quickly approaching, but first, we have to talk about the Bruins weekend, which includes a win in Pittsburgh, which, Bridget and Scott, was Boston's first regulation road win dating back to December 14th, which was a 5-1 win at Vancouver. It's their first road win since January 11th, which is a 4-3 overtime win at Florida, and just their second road win overall since December 17th, which was a 4-3 overtime win at Calgary, of course. They had one road game in all of February due to Four Nations and stuff like that. But I think that was a 14-game sample. And then they followed it up with a loss in Minnesota, a 1-0 loss. And we can talk all about that. So do either of you want to go first with the opening shift? Or would you like me to start?
You can start. I think yours connects to the game action the most.
Okay. Happy to go first. And yeah, so the Bruins lose 1-0 to the Minnesota Wild. That coincides with David Pastrnak's 17-game point streak coming to an end. And so, Bridget and Scott, my opening shift is simple. It is quite embarrassing for this forward group that they just cannot pick up this player, pick up their teammate who has literally carried them on his back this entire season, specifically since January 1. And Pastrnak goes scoreless for just one game, and just one game, his teammates can't help pick him up. Even Geeky and Zaka, who have been scoring, you know, lately, it's all because of David. Like, he's included in their offense. So I don't know. You watch that and you're just disheartened for Pastrnak. Like, his teammates just can't pick him up one time, and disappointing showing from the forwards and the team as a whole, but specifically the forward group, despite Marchand being out and other stuff like that, but just with Coyle, Lindholm, others, like, step up when your best player has one game where he played well but just didn't find a way to score.
Oh, how about the times that he scored twice and they still lost? Like, that also has happened recently. So it's just, you know, it feels like in those cases, I remember this was a few games ago, I was just saying, like, oh, it's like it feels wasted. And in a way, that point streak kind of feels like a lot of those games, there was squandered opportunities to just add on to what he was able to do. So anyway, do you want me to go next?
Sure.
It's also game related. So my opening shift, because we haven't had a chance to talk about since the call-ups, the three players that came up from Providence that have played the last two games, and the one we were most looking into was Georgi Mirkalov, because this is a player we've talked about a lot and thought he should get an opportunity to come up. And the other two are Jeffrey VL and Ian Mitchell, which I feel like both of those guys kind of just did what they were supposed to do. But the person we really want to kind of like look into how he did was Georgi Mirkalov, and he gets put in a pretty good position. He gets put on the set, comes in put on the second line because Marchand's out. So he slides right into his place and also gets time on the power play, but I felt like wasn't super noticeable in both of those games. And he didn't have a shot on goal in the last game. And I don't know if he had one in the Pittsburgh game, but he had two. So he deferred a lot. He passed a lot. It's not like a negative take on it, but it also just was like, okay, it's time for you to make your mark, right? Like, you want to stay, you have to do something to keep yourself in the lineup. And it just felt like that wasn't necessarily the case. However, based on some reporting, and this leads into your opening shift, Scott, seems like Marchand will be out till after the trade deadline. So that means Georgi Mirkalov will probably remain up and have other chances to, do something, make an impact in a game. But I know we could talk more about that later. And Scott, your opening shift has to do with Marchand.
Yeah, guys, I don't want to be alarmist, but as we sit here Monday morning, like, I think Bruins Nation has to confront the possibility that we have already seen Brad Marchand play his last game as a Boston Bruin.
Wow.
As you referenced, so Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts podcast that dropped just a few hours ago before we recorded, on Monday morning, said that he has heard that Marchand is out until after the trade deadline with this upper body injury that was suffered in the Pittsburgh game on Saturday, but it's not a long-term injury. So Marchand not going to play before the trade deadline. Of course, we know his name has been out there in trade rumors, and how this week goes on contract negotiations is, it seems like it's very much up in the air. Another thing that Friedman said was that basically he can't predict which way this ends up right now. And I would say neither can I. Like, both sides say they want to keep this going. Marchand wants to stay. Don Sweeney said he wants to keep him. But yet, they've been talking contract all year. And here we are going right down to the wire up to the trade deadline. There is a reason it has dragged on this long. And that is because they are not all that close. And unless they get closer and unless there's real progress made, the Bruins would have to confront a tough decision, which is, do you just hold on to Marchand and hope you make progress after the season or towards the end of the season and you keep negotiating and you just don't trade him away because you just don't want to? Or do you really explore trading him? Because I would say what this team absolutely cannot afford would be for Brad Marchand to walk as a free agent after the season and you get nothing in return for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's Scott, it takes a second just to think of a response, because it's a situation that makes a ton of sense rationally. It's also a situation I don't think that any of us on this podcast and Bruins fans and media and everybody in between, the Bruins themselves, thought they were going to be in this situation at the beginning of the season. I think we all expected the Bruins to be a playoff team, clearly, that was looking to add to try to shore up their top six where they were ailing heading into the season, which we all knew that. We didn't think that the Bruins would be shopping Brad Marchand potentially. Even if the Bruins were in the playoffs right now, we would be thinking that they'd be keeping him as their own rental and they'd be trying to add. And then they would try to figure something out in the offseason. But this is not the situation that the Bruins have put themselves in this year. And it's a fascinating conversation, because you have a lot of people that talk about how it would be a blow to the team's damage, or a blow to their damage, a blow to their culture, and it would create some damage internally. And that's, I understand why people say that. Okay, like, or is it more damaging to lose a great player for nothing? If you don't think he's going to resign, which is the big question mark here, if the Bruins and Brad Marchand are confident as we currently speak that a contract agreement is imminent and that they will come to an agreement, then sure. Like, we can talk about him staying as a top six forward in this team. But to Scott's opening shift, and the question that we all have is, are they far apart? And if they are, sorry, he's a great Bruin. He's an all-time Bruin. What does that do for them going forward if he leaves you for nothing and then you're still stuck with, you know, a roster you have to try to build? And I know Brad Marchand is a great Bruin, but the Boston Bruins existed before him and they're going to exist after him. And you have to do what's best for the organization at the end of the day. And if that means that you haven't come to an agreement and you don't think you're going to with your captain, and the team is not bound for the playoffs because they're closer to a top 10 pick. They're just as close to a top 10 pick right now as they are a playoff spot, which is why this team is so kind of polarizing. But in any event, I agree with Scott's, you know, question. It's a very valid one. And how do you feel, Bridget, and listeners, how do you feel about that?
Well, my gut feeling is that's not the case, that it's that he is going to be here through the trade deadline and eventually get a deal done, because I think that first of all, it would not be a situation, or it shouldn't be a situation, where a blind side would be involved, where it would be like, oh, okay, like, seems like they're not coming to the table the way we want them to right now. We're going to, you know, try to ship them out to one of the teams that isn't on his no trade list, because there's still a good chunk of teams out there, pretty much half the league, they're able to trade them to. So I think that they would have to literally be sitting at a table and say, all right, this is over. This is done. And now what do we do? Before there's just like okay, we're shipping him out. Like, there would have to be some sort of like Marchand in agreement, them in agreement that it's done and that this is what's going to happen, that he's going to get traded. I don't think the Bruins are in a position right now, if they really do think this is a retool, not a rebuild, to lose a top six forward right now. Like, they didn't add one in Elias Lindholm, in my opinion. Like, he's not producing like a top six forward. They don't have depth in that position at all. And I don't know if you're like, part of your idea of trading Marchand is to get a top six forward in return, but if you're trading it to a playoff team, that's not going to happen. Like, you'll maybe get a pick that you could trade to someone for a top six forward, but I just feel like in that position, they're not, if they don't want to go rebuild, then they have to have a solution there. They can't just get rid of Marchand and just expect things to work out in the offseason and next year. I also don't think Marchand wants to go. I think he's been speaking as if he's going to be here. So I don't know. My feeling is that this, you know, maybe, you know, because of his injury, like, this conversation comes up, and because the contract extension hasn't been done before Friday's deadline yet, because as we speak, it's Monday morning. There's still time, and we've seen this drag out to the last day. I mean, I think Jake DeBrusk's contract extension was signed on the day of the trade deadline. It came all the way down to the last day. So I actually really wasn't like sitting over here, like getting jumpy about, oh, it hasn't happened yet. Like, I was just assuming it was going to happen on Friday, and I still think it could. And I don't think we've seen Brad Marchand play his last game as a Bruin. I don't think he's getting traded. And maybe I am an idiot and we look back on this next Monday and I was wrong, but just based off of what I've just witnessed with him. And I know, Brian, you said you didn't like his body language, maybe seemed like he wasn't so sure. I personally think his body language was that he's still here mentally and that he expects to be on this team next year too. So, yeah. And I also believe when we were doing the press conference with Don Sweeney, that he genuinely meant that he wanted to get a deal done. So we'll see if I'm reading the situation correctly, but maybe I'm not.
Well, I'll just say, when he spoke after the game recently and he mentioned he did have some lines in there where it sounded like he was being inclusive to himself going forward, Bridget, to your point, it sounded like he was using language where he wanted to be around for next year when he said we're building for next year as well, or, you know, if things don't go, you know, our way this year. The body language I was speaking of before the podcast was more so before that comment, where he was, he usually is somebody who is very, very sure of himself. Think back to when he came at Rich Keefe about the report about him and Pastrnak having tension in the room, and he was very just like matter of fact about it. He's like, this is not true. And there's been other times,
like, I don't know what he would be reacting to in like such a strong way. They're not playing well. Like,
look, I'm not saying he did anything or said anything. It's just of his candor, his vibe has just seemed a little bit more subdued maybe than he has been.
We're losing. I just took that as they're losing. Yeah. He's not allowed to be as funny and like joke and stuff like that when they're after losses. Just doesn't feel like the right time to do that.
Yeah, I mean, he made specific comments, and Scott, I don't know if you, they're fresher in your mind, but he made specific comments recently about like how it's, you know, it's not up to him, and he just seems unsure. That's not really me being, I'm not trying to like start anything or cause anything that's not there. He seems like a guy who's been unsure, and I think his contract situation would suggest that. Look, I'm not saying that they can't get a deal done by the deadline. All I'm saying is that when you make the comment, Bridget, that the Bruins aren't in a position if they want to retool to get rid of him, like, that's true. It just depends what he's asking for. If he's asking for 4 years at 36 years old already, and he's asking for like $5 or $6 million or something, the Bruins can want him for a retool, but they're not going to see eye to eye there. So the player is going to have to probably meet them in the middle somewhere. And I just don't know these answers, but his body language, his demeanor has been a little bit more unsure and a little bit more quiet than it has been throughout his career, even in some not so good times.
Right. Like, I would compare it to, and I think I have, like the Tampa Bay Steven Stamkos situation last year, where neither one really wanted that to end, right? Stamkos wanted to stay in Tampa. Tampa, in a perfect world, would have liked to keep him, but Stamkos wasn't going to take a short-term hometown discount. He wanted to get paid, and he wanted longer-term security, and Tampa wasn't willing to offer it. So he ended up walking in free agency, and he got his 4 years, $8 million a year somewhere else. Like, that's how I could see this ending is, yeah, everyone wants this to work out. Marchand wants to stay. The Bruins want to keep him. Bridget, you're not at all an idiot to like read it as them being genuine. They are being genuine. That is what they all want. But it is also a business. And if Marchand wants that longer-term security, wants to be signed until he's 40 years old, wants to be paid something close to market value because, you know, maybe he's not at a point in his career where he's going to take the team friendly discount or go year to year. If the Bruins are, if they're like, we just don't know if we want to commit 3-4 years to 36 year old Brad Marchand and pay him $6 million a year or whatever it might be. Like, there's just a business difference there that might not be able to be bridged. And that's all I'm bringing up. Like, for the record, I also expect him to be here past Friday. Like, if, like, gun to my head, what happens with Brad Marchand? I think they don't trade him. But I'm definitely closer to 50-50, certainly, than you are, Bridget. Like, for me, it's probably like 60% stays. I would go as high as like 40% that he's traded. And that is way higher than I would have expected me to feel even a couple weeks ago. Like, I've also been of the mindset that like eventually they'll figure it out. Well, now there's 4 days for them to figure it out. Like, it's, again, they don't necessarily have to have the deal done by Friday at 3 p.m.
Right.
But they have to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that they are moving in the right direction and this can get done. And they're not just going to be locked in on these two sides of what might be a pretty sizable gap.
That's exactly right. That's what I feel as well. Even to the point about, if I had to say one way or the other, I think he's here post deadline. I agree with that as well. It's just what you said to end that, Scott, which is exactly how I feel. If come deadline day, the Bruins and Marchand are just worlds apart, and you have to take a calculated approach and say, we are so far apart that we're going to risk and gamble losing him for nothing. That's just irresponsible. If they bridge the gap verbally behind the scenes, even if the deal isn't done by deadline day, but both camps know they're close, they're inching closer, then it's less of a gamble, less of a risk to keep him because you have confidence that you're making headway. We're not privy to these conversations, obviously. It just comes down to risk management and asset management. If you think a deal is getting done, if you think a deal is getting done for good reason, then I can see them keeping them, and they should. But if they don't think they're getting a deal done, or there's no signs that they're getting any closer, then you have to do what's responsible.
Let me throw a number out at you guys, I was thinking about this, and like in my head, this is sort of the number I would get to where I'm like, man, I really don't know which way I would go. Let's say the absolute lowest Marchand is willing to go is 3 years, $6 million a year. What are you doing?
Cap's going up. I don't know if that factor, because like, yeah, when you're
it's absolutely a factor.
Mm-hmm. Like, so I say that it's fair.
What I would want to know, and this isn't something that you can just make up, Scott, and it's not part of your equation here, but like, because to Bridges' point about the cap going up, and you've acknowledged that too, it's less the dollars for me there. It's more the term. And what are the specifics of that deal? Does he have a no trade, right? If you get to year two or three, and we get to a situation where we kind of are similar to now, where maybe you kind of want to move him for one reason or the other. Do they have the ability to move on from him? If you're locked into a player until he's 39, I'm not comfortable with it. But I guess what I do it at that, I have more reason to probably say yes than no. Because he can still be a third liner if the team improves and he regresses a little bit. He's not a bad player to have in your middle six at all.
Mm-hmm. Like, if that had been like the offer for Bergeron, wouldn't you all have said like, yeah, that sounds fair? But Bergeron was willing to take an incredibly team-friendly deal, which also kind of sets a precedent that maybe Marchand might feel pressured to follow. And also there's a precedent there that towards the end of both Bergeron and Krejci's career, their salaries were lower, but their bonuses were high. And then that carries over to the next season. So maybe we see that again with the bonuses being a big part of, and like easy bonuses to get.
But even that though, like you can only do that on a 1 year deal. And by all accounts, yeah, Marchand's not taking a 1 year deal.
Yeah. It's I just bring it up because that's what, when we were talking about the end of these other guys' careers in Boston, this is what the contracts looked like. He probably, I think the sticking point for him and probably for both sides is the length of the contract rather than the
money. I agree. I think I agree with that. It could be a combination of things, but the term, I think when he was on What Chaos, he mentioned he wants to play till he's 40. So that leads me to think he wants a 4 year deal. Could be wrong about that. The big distinction though between a Bergeron hypothetical is the importance of the position. It's, can you replace a scoring winger more easily than a top center, even if there's an older top center? And the answer is yes. But yeah, these are the things that I'm sure both camps are weighing right now. You know,
and also like there was a little bit more depth in leadership, I think, back then. Whereas I'm not sure that exists too much now. Like, not to get into like a, I don't want to sound like I'm insulting anyone, but like there are fewer older players on this team that have won Stanley Cups, right? Like, this is, there's not a lot left from that. Like, Marchand is the guy left from that, the previous generation that won a cup. And there's not, they don't have like a Nick Foligno anymore who had the experience somewhere else, came in, brought it in. Like, there's certain things that you would miss besides him just being, you know, a second line winger that affect the team work ethic and just how the culture is.
Yeah. Like, on the ice, off the ice. Yeah. You want to keep him around. Again, it just comes down to whether they're going to get close enough and whether, you know, if they're not, whether Sweeney is willing to make a really hard decision. Like that would obviously be one of the, maybe the most significant trade he's made as general manager, like trading away someone whose number is going to be retired. That's, I know for a lot of fans, like, it feels either they're just like, yeah, of course you should trade Marchand, get what you can. Like, in the real world and the being, you know, thinking about human beings, like, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, and the word that was used over and over in that press conference was cautious and conservative. Like, that is not a move that I would say fits what he was characterizing this deadline to be. Like, he's characterizing this deadline to be boring.
It just depends on how close they are. You have to be responsible at the end of the day.
But if what I'm trying to say is, if he really means that he thinks it's going to be boring, then that means he's not trading Marchand right now.
Yeah, well, and... yeah, I mean, ultimately with Marchand, again, I think it just comes down to, like, whether they see a path towards a deal or not. But, you know, it also does speak to a larger conversation about how big or small this retool is going to be, right? Because we've talked about this, the relatively easy trades to make Trent Frederick, Justin Brazzo, pending unrestricted free agents that certainly you're not going to re-sign before Friday and might not re-sign at all. So you get what you can for those guys. But then there's the bigger moves, whether it's now or the offseason, you know. Well, Marchand would have to be now. Obviously, that you can't trade him in the offseason. But, you know, your Morgan Geeky, Brandon Carlo, Charlie Coyle. Like, do you move any of those guys? Because then you're looking at a little bit of a – you're looking at bigger retool. That probably takes a little bit longer because then, you know, you also have to find replacements for those. Right? If you trade Marchand, now you need to add, like, at least two top six wingers before you're a contender again. You're still looking for a center. Like, that's a lot. If you trade Carlo, you're going to have to replace him with a second pairing right defenseman at some point, but that might not happen immediately in one off season. So, you know, I think it's what makes this week so fascinating. You know, and like, I guess as it's getting officially underway, it's, you know, it's interesting to me to preview and kind of consider all the possibilities. I wrote about it, you know, five questions facing the Bruins for WEI.com on Monday morning, because it really is like an inflection point. And like, I'm not going to be the kind of person who's kicking and screaming if they just go small, if it is just Frederick and Brazzo, like, because this retool was always going to involve this summer too. So I would be more of the mindset of like, I'm going to withhold judgment to see what they do this summer. You know, some of those bigger trades, it's hard to swing them now. Sometimes those are easy to do right around the draft.
Yeah.
But yeah, like what this week looks like and what the Bruins look like after Friday at 3 p.m. is it's really fascinating, because we haven't been here in a long time. It's always been, who are they going to add? How much are they going to add? What are they giving up? And this is just like a completely different discussion that we are not used to having.
It's been 20 years, Scott. It's been 20 years, straight up. And I said it on a recent episode, but even the last two times the Bruins missed the postseason, I believe they were a playoff team at the deadline and fell out eventually, or they were, you know, they it was the last game of the season in the last week.
Yeah.
I think they missed the playoffs by a combined like 3 or 4 points between those two seasons. So even those seasons, they weren't selling at the deadline. I don't look at the deadline as them having to get rid of everybody. Like, I think that between now and June, I think is the real timeline. Obviously, the pending UFAs, yeah, their time to come is at the deadline. But I'm not going to be upset if the deadline comes and goes and Carlo and Coyle are still Bruins, because I'll be upset if the draft comes and goes and at least both of them are still Bruins. I think the Bruins would be wise to trade at least one of Carlo and Coyle. And if I had my way, it would be Coyle, because I think that, to your point, Scott, Carlo is the tougher person to replace. And of those two. And last year, Coyle had a career season. This year, he didn't come anywhere near that. Didn't expect it. But he hasn't been anywhere near the player he was for the Bruins pre-23-24. And I'm just not confident that he's going to be... I think you can move on from him. It is what it is. Can you... What my question is, and I'll throw it back to you guys, is would you prefer that they try to move... Do you think there'll be more value in moving a Carlo or a Coyle at the deadline? Or do you think it would be wise to maybe package them over the summer with maybe their own draft pick? What do you think optimizes a return using those pieces is my question.
So it's not necessarily 100% answering that, but it's in the same line. So I believe Elliot Friedman also on 32 Thoughts this morning in the podcast this morning said that basically the Bruins are receiving calls on those two guys, but the part of the thinking might be hold on to them because they're not on expiring contracts. Hold on to them into the off season and decide then, like, just give yourself, a little bit more time to decide, is this what we're building around, or is this like what we're trying to get rid of? Like, basically, to figure out the extent of the retool or / rebuild? Like, because if you think that you like them on your team, then you're going to go find complementary pieces at that point in time. And you still have all of next season up to the trade deadline to decide on that. It's not like it has to get done before the draft or before free agency or it can be next year. So I think maybe they're not really willing to give up the entire core, because I would consider both Coyle and Carlo the core of this team. And in particular, like, they are voices that we hear from a lot. They're leaders. They were wearing letters recently, but that's because of injury, but they are leaders in that locker room. And I do think that they're considered to be like core players to this team. They've been around for a while now. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a situation that the Bruins are waiting on. To speak to the value changing, I just don't know, because it's just going to depend on the markets at the time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, my lame answer is depends on who's interested. You know, if there's a bidding war on one of them right now and someone decides, you know what, we're pretty desperate for a top four right shot defenseman who can handle tough matchups and we don't see anything better, let's overpay for Carlo. Like, then now you might never get that offer again for him at another point. Same thing with Coyle. Like, if someone decides, yeah, he's having a down year, but you know what? The Bruins are playing him on the wing in the top six. We see him as our third line center. That's what we need. We're just going to go get him. That might be the best offer you'll get for Charlie Coyle over the next calendar year. If that's not happening, or if there's no bidding war, or maybe it's only one team really interested, but their offer is below what you want, then you might have more options in the off season. So, you know, I just don't know, like, what that market is. You know, I really.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For either one of them, like, you need at least two teams to be interested that you can play off each other. So, you know, if that's not happening, then yeah, it's a good spot to be in if you're Don Sweeney on those players in particular, because as Bridget said, you don't have to trade them now. Like, if you're not getting an offer that you think makes sense, then you hold on and you revisit it, and maybe you never trade them. Like, maybe they both are better next year and your team's better and you found a way to get, you know, a scoring wing that you need. Again, we know there's the number one center conversation. That's just that's so much harder. But, like, maybe this team overall just looks better, gets off to a better start next year, and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, we're kind of right back in it. And, you know, we don't have to trade Coyle and or Carlos. So
yeah, you just chalk it up to an off year, right? Off year for up and down, right? Except for probably Pastrnak and Marchand. And, you know, regroup next year. Hope it's not an off year. Like, and add some complimentary pieces that you now learned that you're missing. And then it's not like a crazy thing to think. We all thought this was going to be a playoff team. Like, it's not a crazy thing to think that if you keep those three guys for another year and add a little bit different around them than they did this offseason, that this is a playoff team next year. Like, they're not so far out of it. And I think everybody would agree with that. And I genuinely believe this is going to be a boring Friday. Like, I do think this is just going to be a, did anything happen? Like, well, I'll be broadcasting, but I'd be like texting you guys back and forth. Like, did you see anything? No, like, I think it'll be boring. I don't know. That's just my gut feeling about it. Based on all of the conversations that have been had, that we've had with players, that we've had with Sweeney and different things like that. Like, it all factors in. And I just think it's going to be boring.
Maybe. I mean, I think that the Bruins have options with these guys, which is not a bad thing to have. To your guys' point, like, it depends on what the market is dictating. And there's information that Don Sweeney has that we aren't privy to, right? So he has the ability to properly assess, is it better to move them now or in the summer if I'm going to move them? I know Charlie Coyle is a great leader in the room. I know he's an amazing, likable guy. I don't really care. If he's like not producing on the ice, it doesn't mean anything to, it doesn't mean that much to me, honestly. Like, especially if he was like a fourth line guy, like in a glue guy in the room, sure. He's like being
paid. But if you put together the right team, he could be a third line guy.
Yes, Bridget, he could be. I don't think that's where he is with this Bruins team, and I don't think they're deep enough. So, and I also,
there was a point in time not that long ago where they were.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not in the business of putting, like, I'm not going to put my faith in an aging player coming off of a down year with injury issues. And
I think the issue is that Elias Lindholm hasn't done enough to take over the top, you know, one of the top six roles, and then you're able to move him back for depth if, and like,
How does that change next year, the issue
is you still don't have a second line right wing, which is why Charlie Coyle is currently slotted in there, even though he's not scoring at all this season.
Elias Lindholm's not going anywhere. He has a no move. So this is going to be another problem next year where he's might be not playing well enough to put Coyle in a 3C spot. Look, if the team was built properly, I understand why Coyle could be a third line center. But that's not this Bruins team. And I don't think it's – I'm not going to bank on it being the team next year. And so I would just say this. Like, I would be disappointed if one of Carlo or Coyle were not moved on from for the betterment of this organization. This team needs draft collateral. This team needs to get younger. And they need to start being realistic and forward-thinking. Is it better to keep Charlie Coyle for – you know, the last year of his contract in a year where you might be kind of maybe potentially retooling or transitioning, we don't really know yet? Or is it better to move on from the player before his contract expires when he's already 33, about to be, and he's on a downward trajectory? I think, again, it's about being responsible and calculated. It's not about being personal. And I just think that this team needs to assess their players. Do we think we're going to get more out of Coyle next year? Do we think we have the team next year where it matters if we get more out of Coyle next year? Is he in the right spot with us? To Scott's point, a team might be looking at him saying, yeah, he'd be a great third liner for us because we have all the pieces but him. But the Bruins have too many holes. So I just think that you're doing the team a disservice if you hold on to both players and you're not helping replenish the system or benefit the team going forward, because even Carlo's approaching 30. And I said before, I'd rather move on from Coyle than Carlo for the obvious reasons of it's tougher to replace Carlo. But I'm not going to sit here and be like, in my opinion, well, you know, they're great leaders, they're great guys, and they might bounce back. Cause I just don't feel that way about it. I don't see it helping on the ice right now, and they could be a piece, but I don't think this team is, I don't think the combination of where this team is and where they're going is aligning with how much time we have left in their contracts in their regressing play. So I just want them to be responsible. I'm not calling for a fire sale. Maybe this comes in the summer. Like, that's why I'm saying I don't think both have to go, but I think at least one has to go.
Yeah. Did you guys want to, because I only have like 7 minutes left, transition to some game thoughts? Because I did have thoughts on Merkulov's play. So I, you know, it was interesting. Like Saturday, he had four blocks, and he's like, because Marchand went down, he ends up thrust into a little more minutes, you know, playing up on the second line a bit, gets some defensive zone starts. And I was like, well, that's nice to see. Like, that's good effort. I would say he still wasn't involved enough offensively. And then Sunday, unfortunately, in a game where you get shut out, him and Matt Patra, neither one of them had a shot on goal. They were the only two forwards without a shot on goal. And I saw, you know, there's some pushback like on social media where it's like, well, he's playing with Elias Lindholm and Charlie Coyle. What do you expect? They're not creating anything. And it's like, fair, but like, that's the situation. Look, I'm keeping Georgi Merkulov up. I want to see him get more time. But you do also have to, like, you have to make things happen. You can't just rely on line mates to create grade A scoring chances for you. So again, like, I'm not panicking over one game. I thought he gave a good effort on Saturday. It was just a quieter effort on Sunday, and you don't want those to pile up. Like, you got called up. Your second game up was too quiet. All right, third game Tuesday night, assuming he's in, like, you gotta give me a little more. Regardless of where you're playing in the lineup, who you're playing with, like, I want to see more. So, doesn't mean he has to score, doesn't mean he has to be the best player on the ice or anything crazy, but you gotta be more involved. Like, you can't just disappear for shifts on end, would be just my... Maybe a slightly harsh love to Georgi Mrkalov.
Tough love. I think that to the people who you saw commenting that, you know, oh, what's he supposed to do next to those two guys? It could be worse. That's, you know, he's not coming in on the fourth line. Like, he's not coming in next to, you know, Koepke and Brazil. Like, it could be worse. It could be more difficult. Like, I know people are underwhelmed with Coyle and Lindholm this season. They're good playmakers. These are good passers. Like, they haven't finished enough. What was that?
I said, are they?
I think they're good playmakers.
Quite frankly, I think Elias Lindholm has been an awful playmaker this season.
Okay. All right. In
I think he's been bad at most things, but especially creating offense, Elias Lindholm has not done it. So,
all right. Well, I'm still going to give it to them that they're better playmakers than Justin Brazeau is. Do you understand what I mean? Like, they're more likely to set him up than some of the other guys. And I don't think you're putting him next to Patra, because that's a small, like, well, experience.
That is where he started. I mean, that's where he started Saturday's game before Marchand went down. Obviously, it was only, like, a couple shifts, but...
Yeah, it wasn't for long. I'm not sure how much it would have stayed together, but... Either way, you can't say he didn't get a fair shake at it, because he came in and played on the second line. And if you're mad at him, or, you know, like, you have to just assess what we've seen, I guess. And what we've seen was quiet, but he's going to get more time to hopefully do something. I don't know if you guys had thoughts on his usage special teams or anything like that, or maybe, like, did you notice any defensive mistakes or good things defensively from him? Like, I know, Scott, you mentioned the shot blocks.
Yeah, the shot blocks are good. I would say a couple things I saw that I didn't like, in addition to maybe just going quiet, two plays at each blue line stuck out. On, I believe it was Saturday, he kind of tried to go 1-on-3 on his own entry and turned it over. That might work in the AHL, doesn't work in the NHL. And then Sunday's game, coming out of the defensive zone, he had a play where he kind of, like, pulled up and then just stood still and held onto the puck. And it ended up leading to a tie-up and then a 2-on-2, and the puck kind of pops loose in the neutral zone. And, like, you just need to make a quicker decision. Like, either you're going forward, gain the red line, dump it in, or bump it back to your defense. But standing still with the puck on your stick doesn't work in the NHL. Can't do it.
And I think that there's definitely some learning moments for him in these games, because you're not wrong, Scott. I just think that it's difficult to go from playing in the AHL for pretty much your entire professional career. And then when you get that call up, I know people think that sometimes you get some beginner's luck or some dumb luck, but it really is just tough to implement your game right away, because there is an adjustment to the speed. And that's why I just don't want to see them call him up for a couple of games and then send him back down. I want to give him, like, a 10-game sample. That way there's no argument to be had about we didn't give him enough of a shake. So let's just give him maybe a few more games here. And I don't think any of us are disagreeing with that anyway.
No, and they have, like, they have injuries right now. Like, they have Frederick's injured. He is someone who has probably played his last game as a Bruin. Like, that's who I would have said probably has played their last game as a Bruin, is Trent Frederick. But with Marchand out and Frederick out, there's a spot there. With whoever's contracts they get rid of in the forward group at the deadline, there's a spot there. So there's good reason to believe he'll be here for another few games at the least.
We're going to sign out here because Scott has to go. I just want to quickly say, and we can get into it next episode, one positive development, love Lauri. on the power play with Pasternak. They're getting some chemistry at the top of the umbrella, and we can get more into that, but that was another positive from the game in a season with not many positives so far. Scott, I think you have a hard out, so I'll just tease that for next time maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed, but yes, worth exploring more.
Okay. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will talk to you on Wednesday.